was the Raspberries featuring the late, great Eric Carmen. Happy Wednesday, folks. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found at blogtalkradio.com. Starting Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, talking politics and sports in those fortunate but usually unfortunate times when they collide. And then Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. Should I be saying daylight time or whatever now? And we sprung ahead. That is so stupid. Anyway, that was for the late, great Eric Carmen, who passed away the other day. So what's going on? Well, I'll tell you what. As I've said, I'm going to say it every day. Barack Obama orchestrated or covered up the circumstances of Change My Mind. Hanging out in the official Space Force Observation Outpost, the mini Aussie was fed promptly at 5 p.m. My wife is working diligently over in Acoustic Hankland, and we're doing a short show today because she is heading out of town tomorrow. She's going to go visit the new grandson. I don't get to go. Some of us have to work and can only work where we are. Can't work remotely like my wife can. But hey, somebody's got to go see that adorable little guy, and I can't wait till she sends me more pictures. I can't. Today's first internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. Dems quietly ask SCOTUS if they can remove Biden from the ballot. This next one's really good. I hope it doesn't offend too many people, but actually I don't care. Breaking news, history made as Unitarian Church ordains first openly heterosexual minister. Hey, you can listen to us, as I said, those days. Ways to listen, of course, go online, blogtalkradio.com, click on the live button up top, go down to chatters on the right-hand corner on your next screen, and look for Global Patriot Radio. You can also listen to us in the archive anytime, by the way. How else can you reach out? Well, you can, like I said, get an account, log in, do the chat room like Boyd the Alaskan is doing right now. See if anybody else is in there. Oh, still just Boyd right now. You can also off-list, off-show, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go to Twitter, at hpolysports, as Sue from New Mexico does, and she's on the phone right now listening, as is Hawkeye Mike. Or you can call in live, like Sue and Hawkeye Mike have done. 319-527-6706. I love it when people listen that way. However, as I said in my showrunner, I am not doing calls today because I've got a short show going. I wanted to talk about the stuff I'm going to talk about, of course. We had some losses this week, as I said. Last Thursday, we lost singer-performer Steve Lawrence to Alzheimer's at age 88. He was the first person to make the song Go Away, Little Girl a hit, well before Donny Osmond ever did. In fact, I believe at one point Donny Osmond credited Steve Lawrence's vocal style as a reason that he wanted to do that song. As an aside, Go Away, Little Girl might become one of Dopey Joe's campaign slogans. You never know. Now, anyway, Steve Lawrence was married until her death to singer Edie Gourmet, both very underappreciated singers. They may have become more known after SNL lampooned them with skits featuring Phil Hartman as Frank Sinatra, with Steve and Edie characters continually fawning over him. However, both of them were very underappreciated. Steve Lawrence, because in an era of Sinatra and Tony Bennett and Andy Williams and lots of others, many never saw him as the damn good singer that he was. And same with Edie. Edie often got, when she sang solos, often got just poor arrangements and poor, damn, they were both good, real good phrasers, good at phrasing. Steve Lawrence also played Maury Sline. He was the manager of the Blues Brothers in that 1980 film. Last Saturday, we lost Boeing whistleblower John Barnett at age 62, supposedly to a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So he basically worked for Boeing for 32 years. He worked for Quality Control as a manager for their South Carolina plant from 2010 to 2017. They produced the 787 Dreamliner. According to his family, doctors stated that job-related stress would cause him a heart attack, so he quit. He retired in 2017. He got downgraded by a senior manager for using email to express process violations in place of face-to-face communication, which he took to mean he shouldn't put problems in writing. His manager also allegedly pushed him to work in the gray areas and help find a way while maintaining compliance. He claimed in 2016 a senior manager installed a scrapped, dented hydraulic tube in a plane. He filed a complaint with Human Resources. Boeing said they hadn't substantiated those. He raised issues of more missing and defective parts. Discovered clusters of metal shavings near electrical systems for flight controls. After he retired, he came forward to discuss numerous malpractices, if you will, of Boeing with British broadcasting company, BBC, including overworked employees, not providing proper maintenance. He also noted many of the oxygen systems for the Dreamliner might be faulty as a result. Yeah, so he appeared in a New York Times article in 2019 raising additional quality issues. They subsequently denied what he said. A 2017 review by the FAA had upheld several of his concerns. He issued further warnings earlier this year regarding their work culture and their vehicle safety following Alaska Airlines Flight 1282. Remember that one? A door blew out. And he filed an Air 21, which is a law protecting airline safety whistleblowers, case against Boeing, claiming the firm had undermined his career because he had raised safety concerns at the Charleston plant. He was in Charleston this week for his deposition in his defamation lawsuit against Boeing. Before his death, he had given a deposition and undergone cross-examination from his own lawyers. According to a 2024 interview with his lawyer, March 2024, Brian Knowles, he was reportedly supposed to report for the third day of his deposition, but did not show up or respond to calls. He was found dead shortly thereafter on March 9th in his Dodge Ram truck in a hotel parking lot. From what the Charleston County Coroner's Office characterized as a, quote, self-inflicted gunshot wound. Boeing released a statement that they're saddened by his death. Their thoughts are with all his friends and family. Yeah. Well, suicide or Arkansas, you be the judge. Or as they say, you make the call, as Boyd said. Sounds like Hillary. Sunday, we lost Welsh musician and songwriter Carl Wallinger to undisclosed causes at age 67. My favorite work by him was with a group called World Party. And they did a song called Private Revolution, and I'm going to play it for you here. I'm going to keep the volume down so I can read the rest of the stuff for you. But I love this song. It was a great song. And as I previously mentioned, Monday, we lost Eric Carmen, lead singer and driving force of power pop band The Raspberries. He passed away in his sleep at age 74. He later took to Twitter to espouse his conservative political beliefs. And yes, I followed him. Alas, that's all most of Big Left can talk about. Nary a soul among Big Left elitists could do anything but talk about his political beliefs. Because remember, we're talking about people who think that dancing to Pharrell and T.I. and Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines song makes them hipsters. And they can't talk about the musical success of Eric Carmen because they don't understand the musical success of Eric Carmen and success he did have. Aside from the show that I, the song I opened the show with, Go All the Way, they also charted very well with I Want to Be With You. Carmen went solo, and he charted with All By Myself, followed it with another hit, Never Gonna Fall in Love Again. During that time, he also wrote several hits for others, including two that Sean Cassidy took to the top five, That's Rock and Roll and Hey Deedee. Then in the 1980s, he hit it big, really big, with Hungry Eyes from the movie Dirty Dancing. And then a year later, Make Me Lose Control. So yeah, Eric Carmen was a very good musician, but Big Left can only talk about his politics because they literally don't understand his music. It's very basic. If you listen to the Raspberries, they were sort of considered a power pop version of the Beatles in the sense that they definitely had the musicianship, but they were intentionally appealing to a little bit more of a teeny bopper audience, and that they weren't all about the cerebral part of it, which is not a knock on them. It's certainly not a knock on the Beatles, of course. Hell, there are people that claim they understand everything about the Beatles and don't have the first clue. So if they ever want to call in, I'll pit them up against Hawkeye Mike any day of the week. So this is, as I said, this is World Party with Private Revolution, Carl Wallinger. He was a multi-instrumentalist. He wrote all most of their stuff. And so he could do a lot of the orchestration and then do the vocal track over it. We'll let that one in. We'll maybe play it later on in the next week or something. But great song. And Carl Wallinger, very talented. That's enough of this week's sadness. Again, please pray for Felicia Goodson and her family. Finishing up, maybe finished by now, her cancer treatments, diagnosed a little over a year ago. And by all appearances, doing well. So keep her in our prayers. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's premier call center and messaging service, medical clinic, service company. If you do remote work or you never went back to work after COVID, give them a call, 800-555-3738, or look them up on the internet, AllianceCommunications.com. A couple of quickies. The armorer of the movie Rust was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Rust is the movie Alec Baldwin was producing and starring in. So a jury convicted the weapons supervisor of involuntary manslaughter. So I can't imagine Alec Baldwin's going to skate at this point. Hannah Gutierrez Reed assigned a new blame in the death of cinematographer Halina Hutchins in October 2021. An assistant director last year pleaded no contest to negligent handling of a firearm. Baldwin was indicted by a grand jury back in January on a charge of involuntary manslaughter. He was pointing a gun on the movie set outside Santa Fe when it went off, killed Halina Hutchins, and wounded the director, Joel Souza. Now, the prosecutors allege that Gutierrez Reed unwittingly brought live ammunition onto the set of Rust while flouting basic industry gun safety guidelines. You know, for an industry that is pretty much anti-gun, and I hate the idea of, if you remember when they re-edited E.T. to have all the FBI agents carrying walkie-talkies instead of guns, for instance, I abhor that. But I got to tell you, an industry that's so anti-gun, most of whom don't know anything about guns, it's probably a good idea for those sons of bitches not to be bringing guns onto the sets. Just saying. Maximum penalty for Hannah Gutierrez Reed of 18 months in prison and a $5,000 fine. She was immediately ordered after the verdict to be taken into custody by deputies. She's 24. She was on her second feature film as Armorer at the time of the shooting. She pleaded not involuntary manslaughter and evidence tampering. So Baldwin is scheduled for trial in July on a single charge of involuntary manslaughter. How about obstruction? How about lying? How about lying? Because he said he never fired the gun. We know guns don't fire themselves, despite what Hollywood wants you to believe. Prosecutors say she unknowingly brought live ammunition onto the set. How good an armor is that? Somebody who brings live ammo onto a set when you're trying to, you know, do all these safety protocols. Closing arguments, the prosecutor, Carrie Morrissey, described constant, never-ending safety failures on the set of Rust, and Gutierrez Reed's astonishing lack of diligence with gun safety. She says, we end exactly where we began, in the pursuit of justice for Helena Hutchins. And Gutierrez failed to maintain firearm safety, making a fatal accident willful and foreseeable. Now, in all honesty, I could see Baldwin didn't think he was firing a live round. Absolutely could see that. He's stupid enough he wouldn't know the difference. Brazen enough to think that he doesn't count, that he's above any law anyway. There are also gun safety protocols that might have detected live rounds, they say. I don't know what those would be. So this was a game of Russian roulette every time an actor had a gun with dummies. You know, here's the thing about this. I talk about this when I do my paddle tour. So I right now I'm paddling most of my tours at a place called Silver Spring State Park up north of Ocala, Florida. And Silver Springs has a long history of filming. Well, one of the reasons was, and they filmed, as an example, the original Tarzan movies. They filmed Creature from the Black Lagoon there. One of the reasons, these are live springs. And in that area of Florida, there's a heavy concentration of limestone close to the soil. So limestone comes through your surface, mixes with the water, and it creates a very white background in certain parts of the park. So in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, they filmed Sea Hunt there with Lloyd Bridges. The white in some of those springs, the white backdrop from the limestone, created a great film backdrop. Well, they don't need that anymore. They can do everything on a damn computer. So when I hear about them going on set to Santa Fe or wherever, what the hell for? You can literally do all that crap on a computer and create all that stuff. Create all that backdrop. And I mean, so I don't get that part. But, I mean, really? Bringing live rounds onto a set with people who typically aren't really good with guns anyway? Defense attorneys said there were problems far beyond Gutierrez Reed's control, including the mishandling of weapons by Baldwin. At trial, they cited sanctions and findings by state workplace investigators. Prosecutors did not come close to proving where the live rounds originated and failed to fully investigate an Albuquerque-based ammunition supplier, the defense said. Attorney Jason Bowles told jurors that no one in the cast and crew thought there were live rounds on set. And Gutierrez Reed could not have foreseen that Baldwin would go off script when he pointed the revolver at Hutchins. Investigators found no video recordings of the shooting. Bowles said it was not in the script for Mr. Baldwin to point the weapon. She didn't know that Baldwin was going to do what he did. To drive the point home, Bowles played a video outtake in which Baldwin fired a revolver loaded with blanks, including a shot after a director calls cut. Day of the shooting, Bowles said, Gutierrez Reed alone was segregated in a police car away from others, becoming a convenient scapegoat. Then he goes on to say, you had a production company on a shoestring budget, an A-list actor that was really running the show. At the end, they had somebody they could, okay, well, you lost me at A-list actor with Alec Baldwin. Dozens of witnesses testified, from FBI experts and crime scene forensics to a camera dolly operator who described the fatal gunshot and watching Hutchins go flush and lose feeling in her legs before death. Wow. Wow. That's sad. Armorer Sarah Zachary said in a panic in the immediate aftermath of the shooting, she threw out ammunition from guns used by actors other than Baldwin. That undermined all evidence about the sources of ammunition, the defense argued. Sad. It's a sad story. It really is. The question becomes, will Alec Baldwin face the same fate? This next one, it's supposed to be a laughy. It's not. It's an actual story. It's covered by the Epic Times. This one's just beyond belief. Attorney General Merrick Garland calls voter ID laws unnecessary. He declared on March 3rd that efforts by states to implement voter ID laws are unnecessary and burdensome. He was speaking at a church in Selma, Alabama. Why is an attorney general speaking at a church? Well, he was commemorating the 59th anniversary of the targeting of demonstrators by Selma police. The 59th anniversary, huh? So this wasn't a campaign stop by our attorney general? Church? Which is supposed to be nonpartisan as a not-for-profit organization? He said the right to vote is still under attack, though he was unable to provide any evidence, really, for how requiring identification would be an assault on voting rights. He said, there are many things that are open to debate in America. One thing that must not be open for a debate is the right of all eligible citizens to vote and have their vote counted. Okay. Who's arguing that? The Attorney General said the Department of Justice is, quote, fighting back, unquote, against states that have passed bills requiring identification that would prove such eligibility to cast ballots. Here's something else he said. One of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. Really? No. One of the first things you did was start going after President Trump. He says, that is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements. Someone please explain to me how that is burdensome or discriminatory. How is combating fraud discriminatory? I mean, when these jurisdictions pass these measures, it's implicit. It's not implicit. It's overt that it's to combat fraud and fraudulent voting procedures. He says those measures include practices and procedures that make voting more difficult. It doesn't make voting more difficult. He said such measures threaten the foundation. But he's full of crap. And the gall of this guy to be doing it at a church. At a church. I don't care what church it is. He says court measures have drastically weakened the voting rights. I defy him to note one single measure that has weakened the protections of the Voting Rights Act. This prick says it makes it harder for millions of eligible voters. Meanwhile, he is working in concert with people across the country, various states, to remove President Trump from the ballot. He says it's getting more difficult for eligible voters to cast and elect the representatives of their choice. Really? You mean like in Colorado, where with the stroke of a pen and a couple people in a dark room, they decided to remove President Trump from the ballot? Here's the kicker, Heritage Foundation article found that significant majorities of Democrat, Black, Latino, and low-income voters support such laws and proposals. And Garland's comments appear to be at odds with the vast majority of Americans. Polls have shown that a significant majority of Americans back photo ID laws to cast votes, including a Gallup poll from late 2022 that found almost 8 in 10 Americans support them. It includes more than 60% of Democrats in these polls. 64% of Black voters, 77% of Hispanic voters, and 76% of low-income voters back voter ID laws. They say opponents of voter ID measures don't object to the requirement, but rather the means used to verify them. They claim that a significant portion of U.S. voters don't have a photo ID such as a driver's license, state ID card, or passport. How is that? How is that? Please explain to me how a significant portion don't have photo ID to vote, but are able to buy alcohol, get welfare, fly on planes, open bank accounts, use credit cards. I mean, there are a lot of credit cards. You know, there are often times when ID is required or requested. Like, oh, when you're ordering booze from DoorDash or Uber Eats, yeah, you got to show your ID. You got to show your ID if they ask you for. I mean, in my area, or not my area, but where I drive to paddles up in the Ocala area, most of the Circle K's and Cumberland Farms are both saying that they require ID for all vape purchases. And tobacco, I think, too, now. So you're going to tell me when some dude's buying his pack of Cools that he's going to claim no ID? Hell no. He wants those cigarettes or that vape or that booze, he or she. Yeah, they'll produce an ID real quick. Georgia requires any voter who lacks a driver's license or state ID card to include in his or her absentee ballot application a photocopy of another government-issued ID. Why? Because signature matching doesn't prevent fraud nearly as much. However, in Texas, if you use a different ID number from the one provided when registering, it rejects your ballot. Gee, novel idea, verifying someone's identity. And Merrick Garland, our attorney general, says it's unnecessary, and his agency is fighting back. See what I mean? That was supposed to be a laughy, but it's a story. And here's what I have for a congressman. This is sick. This is repulsive. This is Maxwell Alexander Frost, the youngest member of Congress, the first Gen Zer. He had this thing called the Mad Soul Festival, which was a day of music, art, activism, and protest in Orlando. Lin-Manuel Miranda from the movie Hamilton, he was there with his choir of some kind. He began organizing the event with his friends, Maxwell Frost, back in 2015. More than 3,000 tickets were sold this year. Yeah, meanwhile, 30,000, 10 times that, will go to a Trump rally. Available on a sliding scale. Percentage of proceeds going to Florida Access Network, Zebra Coalition. Now, look, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to say full disclosure. Zebra Coalition is for young, typically minority, minor-aged LGBT kids who have been kicked out of their house. I have no problem with that. I don't. I have never had it in our family, but I mean, I can tell you this. I had wonderful parents. They wouldn't have said, it's great that you're gay, Hank. Thank God I'm not, but and I'm not saying, I'm just saying, they wouldn't have said, it's great that you're gay, but they would never have just kicked me out of the house as a teenager. They never would have ostracized me for it. My parents weren't bigots. They were conservative, but they weren't bigots. But yeah, the Florida Access Network, Zebra Coalition, Equal Ground, and Orlando's Stand With Abortion Now. The spirit of the full-day event was one of dogged determination for a world where every human can live with dignity and safety. Yeah, you mean like in a BLM riot? In connection with festival attendees, we heard countless stories of people traveling from across the state and state lines to be there, drawn not just by big names like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and headliners Muna, but by a deep desire for a sense of community and solidarity in a world that could be perpetually soul-crushing. What the hell are these? In a world that can be perpetually soul-crushing? Yeah, if you're a depressed, selfish, jackwagon druggie, I guess it's perpetually soul-crushing. Who the fuck sees negative like that all the time? Hawkeye Mike's listening. So we used to watch SCTV in college, and we would laugh our asses off, by the way. But there was this one sketch where this guy's talking and they're voiceovering. But one of the things he says is, why don't you get a job where you don't bum everybody out? A sense of community and solidarity in a world that can be perpetually soul-crushing? What the hell world are they living in? Here's what a group of friends who made the four-hour drive from Tallahassee shared with Orlando Weekly. Remember I was telling you about that rag a couple weeks ago? It says, things have been pretty dark here in Florida. It's a beautiful thing to see people from all over the state travel so far to come together. Yeah, all 3,000 people. Another added, we're just happy to be in such a safe space with people that I love and from all over the state. Sounds like a friggin' circle jerk with a bunch of self-important, narcissistic, do-nothing leeches. Then again, that's redundant because I mentioned Congressman Maxwell Alejandro Frost. By the way, let's welcome Duck Northwest Media, a.k.a. Snowman James, and of course the great Vito Esposito to the chat room. Yeah, so here's the thing. Here's the tell, though. They talk about we reported and they reported, and then they said, we heard countless stories. We saw. I mean, this is, okay, so here's the stage. Local activists centered their community's causes and reminded us of the intersections of our movements. Orlando leader Jasmine Bernie Clark, representing racial justice organization Equal Ground, spoke of their relentless efforts challenging the white supremacist agenda of Governor Ron DeSantis. Give me a fucking break. I am sorry for the language. The white supremacist agenda of Governor Ron DeSantis? Sarah Nelson, international president of the Association of Flight Attendants, called on working people to build unions and embrace our power to shape an economy that works for us. How about an economy that works for all? No, for us. In other words, form a union and do whatever it takes to extricate money from those who make it and produce and contribute to societal causes and societal successes and take it away from them. Because nothing spells success like stealing from the rich to give to the poor. Manuel Oliver spoke of his and his wife's efforts to demand action on gun violence following the loss of their son, Joaquin Oliver, in the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. How about we lock up crazy bastards like whatever his name is, Nicholas whatever? How about fat-ass cops put down the donuts and the sugary coffee, get off their ass and go do their job. I'm not talking about lazy cops, I'm not talking about good cops do their jobs. I'm talking about the lazy fat ass ones that slip through the cracks, that slip through any other thing that involves government. God, I got to tell you, I'm really tired of hearing people that come up and say, we've got these solutions. We're going to fix this. It's happening in Orlando. Tavistock is a company that's trying to build in various areas and encroach on people's private property, but trying to swallow up. They're trying to get acreage condemned so that they can then buy it. So they're trying to get their buddies. But you know what? It's not the scumbags that are in office. It's the people that work for them. It's the lifelong bureaucrats that suck from the trough just as much as the elected officials do. But they say, oh, we're going to fix this. They talk about it, you know, as a paddler, I'm outdoors. I am an advocate for the outdoors. I am a conservationist. I am not an environmentalist. I am a conservationist. I believe in respect and preserving what God gave us, gave all of us. But when I hear people say, we're going to fix this, we're going to solve this, especially if it's somebody coming from an official capacity, folks, you should run. Either that or get someone to help you hide the body. Because really, those people are worthless on this planet. People that say they're going to fix something, especially when they say they're going to fix something environmentally, fix the runoff. What do you mean? You're going to fix something that you already allowed when you took developers' money? You disingenuous, hypocritical bastard. Well, 7 Charleston of March for Our Lives, Pine Hills. Pine Hills is a community in the west part of Orlando. I call it Crime Hills. He connected his work, his local work, globally. So March for Our Lives, Pine Hills. Here's what he said. Free Palestine, free the Congo, free Haiti, free Sudan. A ceasefire, an end to military occupation, and a recognition of harms done to our communities is a first step towards justice. He continued, we must commit to completing the action, which means the restoration of land, stolen goods, opportunities, and political sovereignty. We want that from Pine Hills to Palestine. I just can't even fathom the idea of this person breathing air, which I might need someday. He connected his local work globally. Free Palestine, Congo. This tells you what this person doesn't know. I know a retired missionary who testified in Congress about the leadership of the Congo back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, Mobutu. She was considered a war criminal by his government. This lady stands all of about 5 feet tall, and she is a firecracker. She is a committed Christian. She spent her life on the mission field. And when she hears that kind of stuff, free the Congo, from people like this who's never been there, who are never going to put up their own money or their own time or their own military effort, but this bastard saying free Palestine, free the Congo, free Haiti, free Sudan. Does he even know what the hell he's saying? I'm pretty sure the answer to that is a resounding no. Elected officials also shared remarks. Congressman Maxwell Frost announced his reelection campaign alongside Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Greg Kassar of Texas, State House Representatives Anna V. Escamani of Florida, Zoe Zephyr of Montana, and Justin Jones of Tennessee shared the stage and shared their vision for people-centered politics. They all made history. Escamani was Florida's first Iranian-American elected to public office. Zephyr as Montana's first transgender legislator, and Jones as the youngest black legislator serving in Tennessee. Both Zephyr and Jones faced censorship and expulsion from office. And it says, for this, for essentially doing the job, no, not really. It says using their positions to take on giants, no, not really. When Orlando Weekly spoke with Representative Jones, he laid out why he made the trip to Florida and how we cannot discount the South. I'll tell you why he made the trip to Florida. I'm betting you he got paid. He says, we're facing a rising tide of authoritarianism. Yeah. He says, of anti-democratic behavior. Yeah. From your own party. He says, it's attacking black and brown communities. Yeah. Because your leaders are racist. You're a pawn. You're too stupid to know that, but you're a pawn. But you're a willing pawn. You're getting paid to be a willing pawn. He says, it's attacking black and brown communities, women, the LGBTQ plus community, immigrants, students, and so we have to stand together. Who's left? And critically, as young electeds, we have to show that we are representing a new South, and that's why I'm here. A new South. They stand up against gun violence because it's the right thing to do, but they never condemned gang violence. They call for a ceasefire because it's the right thing to do, but they don't condemn Hamas. And here I am veering way off course. Way off course. But that's what I got for a congressman, Maxwell Frost and his frigging Mad Soul Festival. Okay, this is how I felt listening to some of the Capitol Hill testimony of Special Counsel Robert Hur. Let's run over a few things. He spent an inordinate amount of time defending Dopey Joe's quote-unquote right to have classified docs while he was VP and maybe even as a senator. He completely glossed over whether or not Dopey was aware he could or couldn't have possession after leaving office. It had to be asked about 8 times. He hardly acknowledges the ghostwriter and the egregious act by Dopey of sharing anything with said ghostwriter. He admits the ghostwriter deleted files, but in the same breath, practically defends it by saying he maintained, quote, some of the transcripts of the conversation. What did he not have? Why, the stuff he deleted, of course. When pressed by Matt Gaetz and Harriet Hageman, Hur completely avoided their questions by answering with such crap and tripe. It's literally hard for me to discern whether or not he is an actual lawyer and whether or not he understands the concept of following the law. Now they're saying the people that are defending Dopey Joe with some of this are saying Hur is a plant by Trump. He was appointed by Trump, by the way. He cited notations in the report several times. Then he contradicts the report, saying it would be hard to convince a jury. But, gee, that's his job. His report concluded Dopey Joe, his ghostwriters, and possibly others broke the law. He also concluded that at least one person committed obstruction of justice. Worse, he admitted some of the documents may have been used by Hunter Biden for the purpose of obtaining bribe, hush, or graft money from at least one foreign interest. He also concludes Dopey has cognitive issues. Way to go, Robert Hur. That's some serious investigation, boy. And that's the reason he couldn't press for an indictment, i.e. Dopey wouldn't be able to contribute to a viable defense. Hawkeye Mike has pointed out, both to me and on the show, someone who cannot contribute to their defense can't be tried in a criminal proceeding. I get that. Yet somehow, no mention is made by Robert Hur, ostensibly employed by the Department of Justice, that our commander-in-chief is not capable of being president by default. If he's not capable of standing trial, he's not capable of being president. He concludes a criminal trial is off the table, and then he leaves it at that. Amazingly, when he was questioned by Dems about Dopey and his memory, Hur actually seemed to experience his own memory lapses. He can't recall that he meant Dopey had a failing memory. It wasn't exactly, he wasn't sure he characterized it as that. What the hell? Now, I find it interesting that he has resigned from the Department of Justice. Could be coincidental, but I got to wonder why now. He is now testifying as a, technically speaking, as a civilian. And this is the best part. The Dems and the mainstream media are making Dopey out to be sane and competent, etc., and focusing solely on that. They're not even talking about the possession of the classified docs, which is very rich with irony, because in essence, They're admitting that Dopey did indeed know what he was doing in possessing the docs. Their whole argument is no longer about the docs. It's about whether Dopey Joe is dopey or not. So by default, they're practically admitting that, yeah, he did it. Well, then you're saying he's sane. So you're saying he did it willingly. As I said, Robert Hur is now technically speaking, testifying as a private citizen. So I guess we should be prepared for what, an Arkanside? Or will he get, quote-unquote, Boeing'd? Speaking of Boeing, again, here's more on the death of John Barnett. Lawyers are demanding a full investigation into his death, saying mid-deposition there was no indication that he was suicidal. I didn't mention that, but his attorney said we are all devastated, and this is in the midst. They can't understand it because it's in the midst of his deposition in his defamation lawsuit. So there's that. Is he going to get Boeing'd? Is her going to get Boeing'd, or is her going to get Arkansided? Move on with just 9 minutes left here. Sorry, folks. I told you an hour. And I went off about Maxwell Alexander Frost. Good Lord. Women's basketball tournament championship week is still happening, except unlike the men's side, in the men's side, the non-power conferences have their tournaments, and then the last weekend, the power conferences, Power 5, Power 6, however you want to do it. And the women's side is the opposite. The power conferences have had their tournaments, and the non-power are having their tournaments now. So from the ACC, number 14 Notre Dame beat number 10 North Carolina State. So Notre Dame gets the ACC's auto bid. Big 12, number 5 Texas over Iowa State. SEC, actually after a scare and getting a buzzer-beating three-pointer over unranked Tennessee in the semifinals, number 1 unbeaten South Carolina beat number 8 LSU in the final. Both of those teams are it, by the way. In the Pac-12, presumptive freshman of the year, Juju Watkins, at number 5 USC, took down number 2 Stanford, 74-61. And in the Big Ten, Superwoman Caitlin Clark and Iowa's number 3 Lady Hawkeyes took out Nebraska in overtime. Caitlin Clark set a Big Ten tournament scoring record, continued adding to her major college scoring record, blah, blah, blah. I mean, literally, it's becoming that, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. In the final, not her best game. She only got 34 points, 12 assists, and 7 rebounds. Yeah, I know. Right now, the presumed number 1 seeds, according to the bracketology page, are South Carolina, USC, Stanford, and Iowa. Selection Sunday is this Sunday. Moving over to the men's side, there have been some mild upsets in the non-power conferences. While P5 and P6, if you count the Big East, hold their tournaments this weekend. In the Northeast Conference, Wagner, they finished 6th during the regular season. They were down to just 2 subs, 7 people. Yet they went on the road to win 3 consecutive games. That's awesome. I hope they can get just a couple more guys back. I am sure they're going to be a 16 seed, but still, it's awesome that they were able to do that. Missouri Valley Conference, regular season runner-up Drake took down regular season champion Indiana State. This weekend, we'll have a number of teams vying against each other for a tourney spot. The Big Ten is pretty interesting. The top 4 tournament seeds, Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern, Nebraska, are pretty much shoe-ins. Wisconsin and Michigan State probably just based on their cachet year over year. But Wisconsin, Michigan State, Ohio State, Indiana, and Iowa pretty much need wins. Like, I would say both. Wisconsin, probably Michigan State, are probably in with 1 win. Ohio State or Iowa, the loser, they play tomorrow. The loser of that is out full as well. So at least 3 of those teams, Ohio State, Indiana, and Iowa, need multiple wins. I don't think 1 win tomorrow for Iowa does it. It might, but I don't think so. So, yeah, multiple to get in. Minnesota, Penn State probably need to win the whole tournament, but they don't have bad overall records. Iowa could have been playing as the fifth seed with a win overall over Illinois last Sunday at home. Naturally, true to the McCaffrey era, they picked a bad day to start slow. Somebody on the old Rivals forum made the point that every time a McCaffrey tweets anything anti-NCAA or pro-woke, it usually results in an immediate Iowa loss. I don't know what happened in this case. I just saw that post. Any event, the Hawkeyes lost by 12. Basically, I think leaving themselves having to win tomorrow and Friday to have a shot. Here's the sad thing. They have wins over Wisconsin. They have a win over Northwestern, win over Nebraska, all of whom finished ahead of them in the regular season. They also have a win at Michigan State, which isn't an easy thing or an every-year thing for the Hawkeyes. And I think, frankly, if Michigan State loses to Minnesota tomorrow, they're out as well. Indiana and Wisconsin are playing winners from today's games between Rutgers, Maryland, and Penn State, Michigan. So they really can't afford to lose to those teams and not be biting their fingernails come Sunday. Purdue's the easy favorite. But Northwestern and Nebraska both have wins over them. Illinois has the talent. Now, look, last year the Hawkeyes lost to Ohio State. That's who they play tomorrow. Somehow, last 19-13, we made the tournament. This year, like I say, lose tomorrow, and I think it's the NIT. Maybe. Maybe. They might not even get that. And I think win, and they still need another one. Although Joe Lenardi's ESPN bracketology page has them as next four out. But it also says win, and, you know, we could move on. Become obvious, though. Fran McCaffrey, he resurrected the program from an inconsistent Steve Alford era and then the pain of the Todd Licklider era. But he's not a second weekend coach. He has never been to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament as a coach, ever, at any school. So I'm just not sold. I mean, I hate to be negative, but I'm going to close out with a couple laughies. A good post from Wendy Patterson on X, formerly known as Twitter. Wendy's a good follow, by the way, at Wendy P, I think, 4545. And here's what she said last week. She says, I can't imagine loving someone and putting them through what Jill Biden is putting her husband through. Elderly abuse is what we all see. Jill benefited from the Biden crime sprees. Jill Biden needs to be held accountable. I personally responded. I said, you can't imagine it because, like for most of us, it's inconceivable that there are people like Dr. Jill, I put that in quotes, air quotes, who lust for power, control, and money, that they sacrifice their own dignity in addition to the dignity of those they love. But she's so right. I mean, it's really just a flat-out inconceivable thing that Dr. Jill would let her husband go through that. But Internet Laffy, Babylon B, Gaza votes for ceasefire in Chicago. It's good. Almost final. New Senate anti-murder bill caps murders at 5,000 per day. Another one from the Babylon B. Man who needs 37 matches to light a barbecue grill is pretty sure he could survive alone in the woods of Alaska. Second best, church pit crew rushes to change pastor out of his suit and into a Hawaiian shirt for his contemporary service. And the best, Internet Laffy, Biden touts productive climate change meeting with Napoleon Bonaparte. Worst of the week, Letitia James, Fonnie Willis, Nathan Wade, and Judge Engeron are still each holding a law license. Next week, I'll be back with a quick guide to knowing whether or not your date is trans. And remember, as I stated at the top of the show, and I will state every week until someone is able to change my mind, and they won't, Barack Obama orchestrated and or covered up the circumstances of the death of Tafari Campbell. That's all I got to say about that. Folks, it's been fun. I want to thank Vito, Duck, Esotericism, welcome in, and Boy the Alaskan for being on. T. Bodie, Hawkeye Mike, both listening on the phone, and Sue from New Mexico, as always, a great supporter of not just our show, but Vito and other shows. And she's a huge supporter of our network. and a huge supporter of the conservative talk. So, folks, have a great rest of your week. I will be back next week at 6 o'clock Eastern. Don't forget Vito and Al Monday. And don't forget this Saturday, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy. Folks, y'all have a good one. Be safe. God bless. And I am out until next.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.